Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Zudio in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys flapping gums and being chums, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we have a brand new segment for you guys. We're
Do we need a new sound?
I don't know. We're calling it Arbitrary Assumptions.
There are assumptions that are arbitrary.
This is where you, dear listener, are the person behind the counter at a hobby or game or comic book store. Mm-hmm. And Mikey and I are the annoying hang-around customers who talk your ear off about the latest stuff that we find interesting.
Hey, have you read that new issue of the USA latest episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Any nerd worth his or her weight in nerddom has done this before, has spent time in their local blank store. Mm-hmm. Could be a comic book store. Could be a game store. Could be a bookstore. It could be just a hobby store in general. But it could be all of those things.
Could be a shoe store if you're a shoehead.
Yeah, I guess. And you hang around there and you kind of get to know the guy behind the counter, especially if it's a comic book store because you're getting your pulls every week.
Yeah, if you're a good nerd.
Yeah. Also, I'm sure music stores have the same thing sometimes, especially those mom and pop indie ones.
Shout out to Josie Records here.
Yeah. So you always see that guy in there and you get to know him. He gets to know you. So you end up hanging out there for way too long, just chatting about stuff.
Yeah. Combined with the fact that as nerds, we're usually watching and keeping up with stuff and getting into weird things.
Yeah.
And we like the chance to specifically highlight and recommend stuff. It's like, oh, I want to talk about this. This is a neat thing that's in my brain that some people know about, but
yes.
Usually with nerdy stuff, it's hard to find that other person that's like, you're talking about what now?
Mm-hmm.
There's portals in the rift and time travel.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't understand. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. And what's funny is in some cases it might be annoying, but for some reason it's kind of par for the course if you're a clerk at one of those stores.
Yeah, absolutely. Just part of the training.
Yeah, it's part of the thing.
Even if it's only to develop your customer service voice.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
I don't think you could get away with such things as like Starbucks, the grocery store, the normie places. I think they'd be like, would you like to order something, sir? There's other customers waiting.
Yes. No, that you got to have the free time in the store space, a comic book store. Or like when I was working at Blockbuster, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
That's the reason I know so much movie trivia. Mm-hmm. Is just because of recommendations and talking to those people who come up and be like, yeah, I watched these three movies. Let me tell you my opinions about them. I'm like, okay. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. We love it. So have you seen anything good lately? Anything good happening, Mikey, with you?
Oh, there's lots of stuff. But that's how we're kind of starting to break
this down. Some fun stuff going on.
So what have I been watching lately?
Yeah.
Well, there's two things I think we both have been mentioning in the background that I think we can tie together because they're sort of almost a trilogy of sorts for both of them. Mm-hmm. And they both sort of wrapped up. But the one I finished most recently was Reservation Dogs.
Oh, yeah. I will put that in the bucket of didn't want it to end.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Streaming on Hulu, produced by FX, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Some weird combination of that.
Mm-hmm.
A wholesome series that was sort of unlike anything I'd been watching recently.
I know.
It's a tried and true formula. It's a drama comedy. It's a slice of life. We're following a bunch of teenage dirtbags. I say that lovingly.
Yeah.
On a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a coming age tale.
It's definitely a coming of age tale.
But because they're on the reservation, their coming of age is happening in a community. And throughout the show, you get to learn about the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's new stories, new jokes, new characters.
Yeah.
In a sort of familiar formula. So it blew me away. But season three, it did wrap itself up. And that's the most recent that I went through.
Yeah.
So.
In a nice little bow. Yeah, man, this show is so good. Gets a lot of praise and deservedly so And man, this show fits into our often beat drum of tell me the diverse stories that I haven't heard before.
Yes.
I'm all for diversity. I want to hear these stories, but tell me their stories. Don't tell me our Western stories with diversity stuck in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's lazy. I think that's what irks me about it. I'm not irked about the fact that, you know, oh, this character is supposed to be this color and they're not. I'm irked that you're being lazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is a story about Native American teenagers on an Oklahoma reservation, which, in, you know, we live in Texas, so I've been up to Oklahoma. I've driven through Indian territory and those reservations and stuff. And, you know, you just kind of see it on the side of the road and you're not paying tons of attention, but just kind of seeing what goes on there.
For sure.
And just the, like you said, slice of life, day to day, the struggles they go through, how even though they are indigenous peoples and they know they're indigenous people, how still like American teenagers these kids are.
Yeah, they're teenagers for sure.
And it's interesting to see they don't shy away from like the clashes between the culture clashes, I guess I would call it, between, you know,
I'm with you,
Western or white really culture and Native American culture. But it's just so natural. It's just, it is what it is. They present it as it is.
Yeah.
It's not presented for scoring morality points. It's not presented for scoring like tear jerk points.
Yeah, no, yeah, I got you.
It's everything is very matter of fact. And even though they go back and they show you what went on in those horrible Indian schools that the white people made, where they try to assimilate them and everything, you get to see all that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't shy away from the negative stuff, and it's not trying to rewrite or recontextualize anything.
No, and the neatest thing about it is, I think, is that they start pulling in the mythos, the Native American mythology.
Oh, it's so fun,
And it's real. And it's part of it, and it makes it kind of trippy in a lot of ways, but makes it just awesome.
Yes.
And it's played for, it's reverent, but at the same time, it's kind of irreverent, or very irreverent. So,
for a point of example, pardon my language, but one of the terms of endearment in this show is shit ass.
Yeah.
And it's said with love. And it's said like in annoyance and frustration too, but it's vulgarity that's wholesome. It's just in that one word, it's sort of the tone that show gets across.
Yeah.
You shit ass.
And you're dealing with all these great Native actors who we've seen. It's kind of what I think is super cool is there's all these young actors. They're all new to me.
Yes.
But the actors playing the elders are like that crop of first hired Native American actors, like almost every elder was in Dances with Wolves, playing like a young person back then.
Yeah, has played the stereotypical Native American, like from the 90s kind of Native American.
Which at the time, people don't realize how, or might not realize how groundbreaking that was, because it was traditional. I mean, Hollywood was so horrible. like they'd get Italian guys to play Native Americans all the time. And at some point, they realize that, well, you know what? There's actual Native American actors. Maybe we should have them play themselves.
Well, who knows?
Unfortunately, that wasn't until like the late 80s, early 90s that started happening. It was terrible.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Because the crying Indian from the 70s is like, that guy was Italian.
And what's funny is the show is aware of itself because they make that crying Indian joke like three times.
Yeah.
And it's never expected.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, oh, like that's a little stereotypical or whatever, but it's always such a great beat.
Yeah. But it's neat. It was created by Sterling Harjo, he's a Seminole Native American, with the help of the great Taika Waititi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfect. I love it. It's tough in a lot of ways. There's a lot of themes going on that are tough, but there's so much comedy in here. You got Bear talking to a spirit from the spirit world.
That's my favorite character, I think.
Young Warrior.
Yeah. William Knife Man is the spirit's name.
when I was at Wounded Knee, you know, they allude to the fact that he like he died at Wounded Knee,
yeah,
and not in a spectacularly brave way.
No, I think they even hint that he may have died in the outhouse or using the lavatory, maybe, yeah, if I remember that hint correct.
Something like that.
But he is the embodiment of what I love about reservation dogs. Because to your point of what you were saying earlier, they could have done My Name is Earl with Native American actors. Uh-huh. They could have done Atlanta with Native American
actors. Right.
You know, that's what we don't like. When you say, oh, you guys like this formula, this story, let's just, you know, mm-hmm. give it a facelift or a different face. That never works. But this has all the same hits that those two shows have, and it's unique to Native Americans. But so, like, spirituality and the spirits and your ancestors are a big part of Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the show does a really good job of incorporating that in a modern setting.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, I mean, they do it. Like, it's talking to your ancestors, you know, which if you're uninformed now, it's, oh, that person is crazy and talking to somebody that isn't there.
Yeah.
And they play the scenes like that.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they don't, like, it's like
people will see him talking to himself, quote unquote.
They'll check in and be like, are you doing all right?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I'm just talking to my grandma. And they're still like, that's kind of a thing, but are you doing all right? You know? But William Knifeman is the best. So he's the 90s Native American. Shout out to Graham Greene from my often quoted Maverick movie. He shows up. That's the role he played in the 90s. But William Knifeman is the weird naked Indian from Wayne's World, too.
Yeah.
You know? But he's dishing out actual life advice to a teenager or to a person that's learning about life, you know? And it comes across in silly because he's very irreverent. It's not sacred. He makes crass jokes and he makes weird pop culture references. He's like, oh, you don't know about that. That was before your time. Or maybe it hasn't happened yet. Weird, man. Huh? You know? Comes across as a little bit stony, but that shows the combination of the show is like, there is a history, there is a lore, there is a religious spiritual component to this that they're honoring and also telling you about in a really funny, informative way.
Yeah. I mean, we get to learn all about the Deer Lady and all this kind of cool mythos.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, there's so many, and they do that awesome thing of hiring stand-up comedians for like the bit parts.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we got Bobby Lee in there as the, as the physician at the tribal clinic.
Yes.
And he's great.
Oh, good to see Bobby.
Yeah, we get old Billy Burr shows up as a...
Oh, it's a driving instructor.
Yeah, he's like a coach, an old coach. That's what's funny. And the guy we saw do stand-up once too, Kirk Fox.
Opened up for Bill Burr, yeah.
And Kenny Boy, he owns the salvage yard, and he's always trying to convince everyone that he's Native American. And it's what's really sweet is through the whole thing, that's a gag through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, you need to listen to your uncle because, like, they call everyone in the tribe uncle or aunt if they're not directly your mother or father even.
Brother, cousin.
Yeah, brother, cousin, all that stuff. You know, and he's like, you young ones need to listen to your uncle. And he even tries to put on the accent.
Yeah.
You know, it's really funny. And they're always, like, rolling their eyes at him and everything, but... You know, as it kind of wraps up, as we get towards the end, there's some real heavy emotional moments, and he's there, and he's helping out, and kind of by the end of it, they're like, all right, we'll take you in.
You know? Because that is them poking fun at the white man. It's like, is the dude that's like, I get where you're coming from. I know all your struggles, you know, I resonate with the Native American. I want to be a part of your people. And it is very humorous, and they give him a bunch of crap for it. But at the end of the day, the themes are community and relationship building. Oh, but he's so funny. He uses all the words because he thinks he knows them, you know?
Yeah. Aho!
Yeah. Oh, it's great. But, that's another thing. The dialogue in this is usual teenage sort of outside of town show dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, they're complaining about there's nothing to do, or man, a big thing is there's a lot of loss and grief in the background story. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like struggling with that and being teenagers about that. But there's also like the slang that's in there that you get to pick up on from the way they're using it then, you know, like Skoden, like it, you see it in like subtitles, they're saying Skoden. I'm like, what is Skoden? Are they spelling Edward Snowden wrong? Like, are my subtitles bad? And it's just, it was their quick version of let's go then.
Yeah.
And it's just Skoden. It's like, oh, okay.
It's got such a great ensemble cast. It's a great show. It deserves all the praise it's getting, and I wish only good things for all the kids that are in this show, because they're great. Every last one of them.
Yeah, I'm really curious to go back and see more of Sterling Harjo stuff.
Yeah.
Because he has a couple films under his belt before he got to the show. And I thought the show was like his start, especially with the Taika Waititi. And like, there are a lot of big names sort of supporting this getting out. But I thought he was like, this was his first thing. But he actually has some film work that I got to go do the rabbit hole on, because that show was awesome.
It was and it was one of those, I didn't want it to end. I dragged out watching the last season.
That's it.
Because I didn't want it to stop.
Yeah, Willie Jack is the second run-up. Yeah. She's one of the main, she's part of the main gang of the kids, but I would say she's also the most charismatic out of all of them, too.
She's great. And that was originally going to be a male character.
I believe it.
But they switched it because she was such an awesome actor.
And they do that wonderful creator thing where, like, it is the most rough and ready character, you know, the most down and out, I guess. Yeah. But she gets the biggest lessons or the coolest moments, you know, and you're like, it's so heartwarming. It makes you feel so good.
Yeah.
For a show that has its sad moments, that's one of the reasons I also stuck with it, is just there's always payoff for, like, you stuck with it, you're going to learn something, and you're going to feel better.
Another heartwarming show that kind of ended with a big question mark.
Yes.
Because we're pretty sure it's over, but they never have said really if it's over or not.
This one had the less definitive of the ending.
Yeah, and my kids are like, no one watches that show except old people.
Ha ha ha, I believe it.
But we're talking about the huge hit Ted Lasso, which is the only reason I got an Apple subscription. And I think I canceled it once I was like, oh, this is done.
Well, was it worth it for the 2 months you paid for it?
So, I mean, I don't know how they did it. They did a magic trick with that show. And the fact that it's totally upbeat and feel good, but at the same time, it stays interesting and engaging. But it doesn't ever, it gets like life heavy, but doesn't even get too heavy.
Yeah.
But it manages to do it all without being like totally milquetoast and, you know, and
it's neither boring nor overly saccharine.
Yeah, saccharine is exactly the word I was looking for. And it could have easily gone there. Mm-hmm. It kind of touched the edge of it. And I think maybe the younger ones do see it as saccharine, but they weren't around when us olds were around, when there was really saccharine stuff out there. Really just artificially sweet. That's what saccharine means, for those of you who don't know. Because people are like, what the heck is saccharine?
It's an old thing they used to put in soft drinks in the 80s that made everybody... Oh, no.
Just saccharine's an old band artificial sweetener. And the word saccharine became slang for something that's artificially sweet, manufactured to be sweet, not actually sweet.
Here's a really nerdy, pedantic question, though.
Yeah.
Did the sweetener come first?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I had it backwards.
It's been around for a long time. It's one of the first ever artificial sweeteners.
I know, but like, for some reason, I would think you could describe a play as saccharine, but you know.
Well, you could if it happened after.
If it happened after the sweetener.
Yeah. But it's old. It might be from the 50s or something.
I believe it.
One of the OG ones.
Oh, yeah. When they didn't know what actual chemicals were.
Yeah.
This
chemical tastes sweet on the tongue.
It kind of does what we...
Stick it in everything.
Kind of does what we predicted.
But, yeah, man, Jason Sudeikis is... He came out of SNL good.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, with a track record... Like, SNL has the track record that if you do SNL, that's pretty much all you do, like, for the majority, you know?
Yeah, SNL's interesting in that way with its various... the hits and misses.
Yeah, sometimes you're Mike Myers or Jason Sudeikis.
It seems like every cast only gets a couple.
Mm-hmm. Chris Farley's.
That cast actually came out pretty hard. You know?
But I'm saying, like, outside of that, you know?
Yeah.
But no, Jason Sudeikis is the titular Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And I think he is the main reason this show works. I mean, you know, the show's been promoted and out for a while now, so he is the reason that this show works as well as it does, just because he has that attitude, and it's so believable and authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's wonderfully silly.
That's it.
That's that's part of it. It's just so funny to me how, and the, all of the drama is for the most part just relationship drama.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking that because, like, you're saying your boys don't really resonate with it. And that kind of makes sense because a lot of these characters are sort of like, it's not really second chance at life, but it is sort of
it is actually.
But also, like, have lived life, have learned some lessons. It's not your reservation dogs, like, kids coming up.
Exactly.
You know, it is. Ted Lasso is more enjoyable if you've lived life a little bit more, I guess.
And all the characters are kind of like, are broken in some way, but manage to fix each other up.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, everybody has their, like, what's your little button or problem? Yeah. Like, some things are a little dressed up. That's why Ted Lasso strikes such a chord, because he's so happy and positive and optimistic. People are like, what's wrong in your brain? Why are you like this? It's like, it's just how my mama raised me. That's how I am.
Yeah.
That's how we go. Believe. Ted Lasso.
I mean, and it's like, being a person like me, you do too, and any nerdy person, you're kind of steeped in a lot of the PBS, BBC shows. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, most of the cast is British, and it's set in Britain. So it's this wonderful melding of, and I don't know how they did it, but they did it wonderfully because it has a lot of that BBC Britcom sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
But also the injection of the American kind of, what do you call that, single camera types?
Yeah.
Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not presented as that, but it has that kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, snappy jokes and stuff.
Yeah, it's this nice little mix.
And it is the not really fish out of water, but stranger in a strange land. We are also the American that's going over to be like, what's football? I thought we called it soccer.
Right. And it's just so original. And deservedly so, the ensemble cast is great because you're seeing a lot of them come out of that show now and be in things.
Well, Hannah Waddingham, she is a delight. Yep. I had a hard time believing of her as the, you know, the hard-ass boss. She does well. Like, she does have the stern British marm quality about her. But she's just winning and charming, and her whole smile lights up every scene she's in.
I like Roy Kent. That guy is great. And isn't it going to be Hercules now?
I would hope so. Guy who is also captivating.
Yeah.
He should get more stuff.
He should. The Roy Kent and his niece, that I could do a show with just that.
Absolutely.
That was delightful.
it's the gruff. He Roy Kent is the, this is such an old pull, but he's, he's the Charlie Sheen Wild Thing from Major League, man. Mm-hmm. He's the bad boy who doesn't play by the rules. He just gets the job done.
Yeah.
But then, of course, he has to take care of this little girl who knows he's a big sweetheart.
Yeah.
And will tear down all of his walls.
Yeah.
And he'll submit, but he'll be grumpy about it. He's like, fine, we'll get ice cream. But quit being a little jerk.
I love it. Even
he's there. He's everywhere. Roy Kent.
I love the show, but this won't even bother you because you watch everything with subtitles anyway.
It's true.
Because of your ability.
My superpower.
Yeah. But I had to watch the show with subtitles. Because some of the accents, because they have some real working class Brits in here who play on the soccer team.
Absolutely.
I couldn't understand what some of these guys said. But bruv is some new slang you learn. Bruv.
Yeah, bruv.
Yeah.
Biss happening, bruv.
But some of the times, like if you got Jamie Tartt and Roy Kent talking to each other with like the captain of the team, I'd be like, I don't know what anyone is saying right now.
It just, the subtitle, it didn't clue me in. It just said angry mumbling.
It's just like, what's your face, bro? What's your face? What's your face? That's all I was hearing. I'm like, what's going on? I had to watch it with the subtitles on.
I believe it. That's one thing about this show that happened for me is that the cast in this is so good that it's one of those shows that I've also like followed the people that are in it and like what they're going to do. Speaking of Jamie Tartt, he's great to go listen to interviews of because he almost had like a, not like as severe, but he almost had a Dick Van Dyke style boo-boo because his accent for the show is like made up.
Oh, really?
That's not his accent.
Oh, wow.
And not even close to it. Like, he is British.
Yeah. But he's not from that part.
He's not from that part, and he had to learn it. And he says, like, season one, I was kind of, like, figuring it out. And apparently, like, fan response is like, what are you doing? Like, nobody sounds like that. And so we had to adjust it. But he learned it from, like, listening to grime and UK rap.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
So, like, that's why it sounds so modern and specific.
Oh, I want to hear him talk regular now.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's weird because you're like, I know I'm listening to Jamie Tartt, but it doesn't sound like that's it in my
funny.
Head.
It's funny, too, is that in we did a, you know how sometimes you're just with the fan. I think it was just me and one of my boys. And we're like, let's just watch a movie. I don't know what we should watch.
There you go.
And Year One was on.
Oh, yeah. Michael Cera.
Jack Black.
Yeah.
And we're like, Jack Black's awesome. Let's just watch this. And Juno Temple, who plays Keeley, is in that. Like, as like
right.
She's like 19 or something. Like, it's like baby Keeley. And it was just so funny. I was like, oh, like I didn't know. And I was pointing at it. And I was like, oh.
You get to be Leo in the meme. You get to point at the TV. Yeah. It's like, I know that person. And I hope to do that more with these people because Roy Kent's the best. Again, Beard is my favorite character
yeah.
if I had to pick one.
Beard was he was always up to something and Ted didn't want to know.
Yeah. And that was the best because the show does, like we're saying, it's very sweet, very wholesome. It makes you feel good. That's why we're recommending it here. Yeah. Go watch it for something to make you feel good. But every time it got really sweet, they would either like something bad happens or something goes weird or there is they take a left turn that keeps you engaged, right?
Yeah.
Beard gets one, like he always seems like the silent sage. He's the monk in the background that anytime he speaks, he says the right word and you're like, oh man, what is that? Like, how is he so wise? He's obviously been through something. And then we get a whole bottle episode of him like going to a nightclub and dealing with his ex-wife. And it's just I think they only do it once in the third season, but it's just a Beard-centric episode. And you're like, I know all about this character now. And it's very weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they never really go back to it.
No, it was great.
But everybody gets their sort of context and their backstory.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of them are fleshed out. But I think Beard was my favorite.
I think it was really funny when Beard gave Ted like hallucinogens.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes to the American restaurant, which has all Australians in it, which is hilarious. And then like he has like this, he has this crazy like trip where he invents a new way of playing soccer that isn't a new way of playing soccer.
As you do.
and the funniest part is that the drug was a dud. It didn't even work.
It was a placebo, man.
Yeah. He was like, so I came up with all that on barbecue sauce. It's just
hate to tell you, my friend, but yes, you just gotta believe in yourself. It was in you the whole time.
Oh my goodness, good shows.
But yeah, then it's a trilogy of seasons, but we don't know if it's coming back.
I mean, he like went home, and it seemed to be over.
There is a resolution.
Yeah, there was a resolution.
Do you think they're just leaving it open for the possibility like 5 years from now and be like, oh, we still own this rights, let's do a comeback season?
Maybe, I guess. I don't know. They're real mum about it.
Yeah.
Because, sometimes they say like, yep, we're done. But they never really said, yep, we're done.
Well, maybe everybody is sort of like, okay, we need to go do other stuff.
Other than Jason Sudeikis, he did say like, yeah, I'm done with that character.
Yeah. Because that is, the whole cast, it's a whole ensemble, and they all stayed around. So
yeah.
There really isn't, like, too many people dipping in and out. It is, like, eight main crew.
Yeah. I don't like it when stuff comes to an end, but I like it when the creators are able to end it, if that makes any sense.
I was also thinking this, too. It's also very British. British are like, we're going to make a series.
Yeah.
It's going to be a short run. We have a planned ending, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to revisit it, we make a new doctor. I mean, or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Planned endings are the best, though, really. Because you don't end up stuff with, like, Firefly and all that pain. So painful.
Or watching your series go on for way too long. It's like, okay, you lost the thread.
Yeah.
Yeah. You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah. Are you playing any cool games right now?
I'm going nuts. You can go first if you want, but I...
Oh, you're going nuts? I want to know.
Because
you kind of stopped playing games for a while.
Yeah, Xbox died. That's just life problems. But my computer has sort of always been a serviceable machine.
Yeah.
And that was something I recently upgraded for myself, and so I put myself back into...
You got a cool rig over there now with lights and...
That's it. It's
powers RGB. In there.
You powers got, in there from the convention. Yeah. But with that, I'm now sort of back into normie world of PC gaming. It's like, you can play games from the last... 6 or 7 years because I couldn't really before.
So you got Steam?
I do have Steam.
Oh, yeah.
I got all the terrible launchers, but all of the games are great. So I've been playing a whole bunch. But with Steam, I've noticed that what's crazy about games right now is that not only can you do genre specific, like, I want to go look at platformers or I want to go look at RPGs, now there's such a breakdown. Like, there's now subgenres within subgenres, and it's getting almost to like metal band level or metal subgenre level.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm
man,
like,
there's so many metal subgenres. It's cuckoo.
And games are getting like that now. So, like, it's kind of a meme thing, but there's like Souls games, which is Dark Souls and your Bloodborne's, where it's going to be a hard game. It's not going to hold your hand and tell you what to do. You're going to die a bunch, and it's just going to be hard the whole time, and you get to feel a sense of accomplishment if you make it to the end. Whole style of game, you got your battle royales or your battle arenas, like your Overwatch and Fortnite and all that.
PUBG.
Yep. I had a lane that I thought was nerdy and sub lane already called roguelikes, which is sort of like dungeon dives where you get, it can be pre-generated dungeons, but it's a new adventure every time. Mm-hmm. You get a different skills and weapons and you see how good you can do on that run.
Oh,
I really liked it because it's very arcade style. When work gets crazy or when we're watching so much TV, I have a hard time getting into like story games or sitting and playing for hours at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do appreciate the arcade games where it's just like, okay, I can get like 4 or 5 runs
in.
So I was like, roguelikes, that's my nerd. Like, that's like saying I like Afropunk, it's some sort of subgenre. But now they've gotten even nerdier. And they've taken roguelikes and they've made them first person. So there's this whole lane of that.
Oh, wow.
And I say that to discover that I have a new weird niche genre that I love, and it's first person roguelikes.
Wow.
One of the games I will recommend for anybody to play that'll give you an idea of the concept is that it's called Ziggurat 2. But what it is, it's essentially like when you get together with your friends and you do the D&D one shot, it's like, okay, let's just go down in a dungeon, see how many monsters we can kill.
Yeah.
Tomb of Terror, like how long can I survive? Yeah. Like, I know there's going to be traps to the left, something weird up front. It's that concept, but now they've, it's first-person view, which I'm not a huge fan of, like Call of Duty stuff. But when you put it in a medieval setting and give me a shield in one hand and a sword or an enchanted mace of ice, whatever, I'm all about it. And so it's a new adventure every time. The graphics are great. It's really arcadey, and I don't know. It's this lane I was like, didn't think you can get specific, but you can go just search by first person roguelikes, and now there's like tons of them. And I'm like, it's a whole wealth I didn't even know existed.
You're like living a modern Josh Baskin's life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. if you get that reference.
And for the people that don't get that reference,
that's Tom Hanks's character in Big, and it starts with him playing like the 80s version of a fantasy roguelikes.
Yeah. He goes to fight the Ice Wizard.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget what... I used to know the name of that game, but...
Yeah.
Ice Castles or something like that.
Ice Castles.
Yeah. No, but, like, I just like this concept because there's... I'm blown away because, like, with streaming, you see, there's so many shows out there, you can kind of just go pick and narrow it down to, like, I'm almost guaranteeing this will be a fun time for me, And with streaming music, same thing. You can spend your whole day in 70s disco and never leave it if you want. And it's cool that games are like that now. Because that was always the bummer. Like, being an old school gamer who was growing up, it's like, all right, I spent $50 on this. Let's go. And you're like, oh, I don't even like the concept of this.
Yeah.
I guess the art's okay. But now you can be nerdy and specific about it. I'm having a blast with it.
That's what's great about used game shops. We found that new one. Shout out FX Games in Plano, Texas.
There you go.
But those mom and pop used game shops, they're great.
Yeah.
You can go in there and you can be like, oh, I heard about this game. It's $5. What do I got to lose?
That's it.
Go get it. Even though we do that thing because we have Xbox Game Pass, we'll literally like go, is this on Game Pass? If not, let's get it.
Yeah. Do I own this already?
Yeah.
What a terrible problem to have.
I might own this already. Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with, we talked about it previously on some of the Nerd Alerts, but Game Pass has all the old Diablo-style Shadowrun games.
Yeah.
And I started off with Shadowrun Returns, and that was fun enough. But I'll tell you, I've started the second one, Shadowrun Dragonfall, and it is like way better. I mean, it's the same game, but they definitely leveled up with it. And I was afraid that it was just going to be, you know, that first game again, but it's way better. It's more, it makes me feel more like I'm playing an RPG, the Shadowrun role-playing game.
I gotcha.
With a really good game master, because like the first one was kind of on rails and there weren't as many choice paths. This one doesn't have tons of choice paths either, but this one has surprises in it. And this one has a few choices that you can't. So it does have choice paths. It's not as intense as some games, I mean.
Like, I gotcha.
Where like it'll turn you evil or turn you bad.
But you want to murder this planet?
Yeah.
It's like, no. We did this through dialogue?
But there is stuff like that. You can choose to like let people go or cap them or
right on.
And things like that. That really wasn't so much in Shadowrun Returns, but that's really in this one. And then I assume it affects the game down the line. I know it does because there's a point where you're going on a run. They call it a run. That's what they call shadow runners. They run in the shadows. You're going on a run and you get approached by some other entity saying like, I know you're going on this run, but if you want to grab that prototype and give it to us instead of who you're going on, we'll make it worth your while.
Choose which faction you want to work for.
And then you can ask people on your team because there's you have a team of Shadowrunners mm-hmm. that are pre-generated characters. They're part of the game. They show up on the masthead of the game. So, and you can talk to them and kind of suss out who's okay to work for. Like, hey man, you're like, hey, have you ever heard of, there's like a group called the Lodge, and you ask one of these and it just shows up after you talk to them. You're like, oh, there's a new little dialogue choice.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
And it's like, you know, have you ever heard of the Lodge? And you ask one of the characters and like, I don't know, you mean like this, like a hunting lodge? Like, no, I don't, it's just called, they just call themselves a lodge. And like, I don't know, maybe you should ask this other character, ask Dietrich, because he's been in Berlin forever, set in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go over to Dietrich, and he's like, are you talking about the Black Lodge? Do not work for the Black Lodge. You know what I mean? He's like, blah, 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 all these.
Yeah.
And it gives you more dialogue choices where it's like the, I want to be a good guy dialogue choice. I want to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be neutral.
Yep.
I'm hard. So, but and it's neat because you get to sit there and be like, well, I am kind of a shadow runner. And so it's a lot of fun.
Do you respect, as a nerd, do you respect the lore that's in the game?
Yeah,
you know, or do you just go off the rails in whichever direction you choose? What do you usually go for? Do you like to sort of see if you can fit into the story they're trying to tell you? Or do you like to try and break the game?
I don't try and break the game. I try and play the character as I believe the character is.
Okay.
So I have a dwarf, what I would call.
Have a name.
I have a female dwarf fighter mage, is what I'd call them.
Fun.
Which is super fun to build in Shadowrun, because Shadowrun, for those of you who don't know, is cyberpunk mixed with fantasy, like Dungeons and Dragons fantasy. So you got dwarves, elves, orcs, trolls, humans, and there's magic, all the magic orcs. There's shaman, there's magic users, and then there's all the cyberpunk stuff.
Yeah, there's still computers and tech.
So, yeah, yeah, there's hackers and all that stuff. So you can kind of mix a little bit. Like, the more cyberware you put in yourself, the less magical you can be, because mm-hmm. you need to be meat to be magical. But you can put a little bit in, and you won't lose, it's called your essence. You won't lose too much essence if you're careful. So I have like a cyber eye that has like the reticle thing for my gun.
Your heads up display?
Yeah. And then magic. So I'm kind of like a combat. I made myself, because you can really tailor the character in this one, which mm-hmm. is super cool. So I'm kind of a combat mage. I gave myself stuff to like destroy people's armor and
armor piercing.
And like the magic mist, like all the evokers, all the attack spells. And I gave myself, I can armor myself up with magical armor.
Yes.
So I can wear the robes, because they have different outfits that give you different pluses. So I can wear the magic user robes, which has almost no armor on it.
Gotcha.
But gives you bonuses to casting and all that stuff.
So it's a little bit more cleric than it is tanky so, up front.
So, but then, dwarf. But then when I put armor on myself, I put magical armor on myself.
There you go.
And then I destroy other people's armor and then just blast them with my gun because they don't have any armor anymore. So it's just like, it's just cool to me to have one hand with like this pistol that's like smart linked to my head.
Yeah.
You know, blasting. Mm-hmm. And then the other hand, I'm throwing magic missiles and flamethrower bolts out.
That's
so much fun.
That's half the fun of it. I think I've only played one of the Shadow Runs. I've played XCOM, which deals a little bit in that same sort of property style. I love the blending of sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah,
Shadowrun
really cool.
Does a really good job
it's
of
really
it.
Really cool.
But I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3, and that I mentioned on a previous episode, Warhammer Rogue Trader, and all of them have that. Yes, they have like the moral choices and stuff like that, but just also like such specific character, like what playstyle do you want? We probably have something
that
fits you.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you don't have to be a fighter mage. You can be anything.
Yeah.
You just go. But and I'm just really geeked up on it right now because it totally twisted me. Like, they just threw in a twist in there that was like a great game master would do.
There you go. You didn't see it coming.
I did not see it coming. I was getting to the point where I was like, okay, I've done these things, and now here's me, the big third act. I'm about to fight the big boss, and then everything goes to hell.
Love it. Perfect
and it
third
is
act.
Crazy, and it's like in like people are dying who you didn't think should die, and you're like, what is happening right now? It's crazy.
Are you a save scummer? Are you the type of nerd that, like, with games like that, one of the things you can do is, you know, you make a save, you pick a dialogue option, you're like, oh, I don't like how that turned out. So reload the save, pick dialogue option B.
Sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that sometimes.
I love it.
Because there was this one specific, this does actually let you make choices. There's this one specific run you're on, and you're trying to figure out how to get into the building, and you ultimately find like it's not a sewer, it's like a underground utility thing.
Mm-hmm.
And down there, there's like some kid who's trying to do like suck power from it because they can't pay their electricity bill or whatever.
A little Oliver Twist.
And
yeah.
You realize that what they did, if you like cross these other wires, you can totally take down the local grid, so you'll be able to sneak into the building because everything will be chaotic because the security systems won't have power and all that stuff.
Yep.
But if you do, they'll be able to use the matrix, the cyber net, to trace it back to the kid stealing it.
And they'll take a fall for it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So you have to make the choice, like, do I do this? So ultimately, I made the choice because I had a hotshot Decker with me. That's the guy who does the hacking. That
in reference to Blade Runner.
Yeah, that we could go ahead and do this, but when we get into the place, we'd reroute, like we'd make it look like it came from somewhere else to save the kid.
Protect the kid.
And you don't have to do that, so that I guess probably when you come out, the kid's screwed or whatever, but...
Yeah, and there'll be some narrative ramifications because you took the effort to save him, you'll get some bonus.
But the narrative ramifications was that you get like basically an email saying like, thanks, and I can't believe you know?
Yeah.
You stuck it to him.
You
that
feel
was
good.
Great,
there
you know?
You didn't get the obituary newspaper clipping that says,
little
boy, an entire village underground decimated because of your actions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, how'd they know it was me?
Yeah.
No, but I love it.
It's tons of fun. It's really like my whole life playing tabletop games and video games. I always wanted the two to meet each other well enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad that they have, that you can get that experience of playing a tabletop game through a video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Without it being totally janky.
And part of the reason Baldur's Gate 3 is getting a lot of conversation right now is because they do that formula really well, too. Like, for being a modern AAA beautiful looking video game that's got awesome character models and people you want to like play through the story just to see more of the character. It's also still dice rolls and choices stuff. And they do a real good job of like making it a good mechanic.
This runs on the Shadowrun system. I can tell.
Yeah.
I've played it. So it's really cool.
Didn't you say you also re-rolled your character because you didn't like the character you started with?
Well, because you have to, like, you get a lot of, it's called karma points, the points that you spend, and I was spreading it around too much was the problem.
Yep.
You know, jack of all trades, master of none. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I was, when I was getting to the tougher levels, my character really couldn't hang.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people I brought with me were doing a lot better than I was, which is no fun. You want to be the best.
I'm in charge. I'm the main character.
And it was because they progress, the computer progresses them, and it progresses them kind of along a archetype line.
Yeah, a more specific, powerful,
So I had to decide, doing too much stuff. So I decided to just go with the fighter mage because that's cool to me.
I love it. Yeah. You made me realize I didn't say too much about Ziggurat 2 because it really is not too much to that mechanic. But one of the things I do like about it in this sort of conversational sense is that it takes that. Sometimes the character creation is a little much.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I can't make this decision right now. I want to be undeclared and then figure it out. That's kind of what Ziggurat 2 does, is that it's all those mechanics. Like, it's a little bit more fast and arcadey in that you turn left, it might be a trap room. You go straight, it might just be monsters. Mm-hmm. You go right, it might be boss, mm-hmm. you know. But you pick up things along the way, and you sort of shape your build as you're going. And so it's less of like, oh, I didn't pick the right thing. It's like, oh, what's the best way I can use what I've been given? And sometimes it doesn't work out. You die, and then you start again. It takes a little bit of the thinking out of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I like that. It's like, oh, just let me go blast some monsters and get some loot.
Yeah.
But no, man, like following arcs and getting those power-ups, you got to have it. I love having a PC that lets me get through some games again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been out of it for a minute.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to talk about something I found at the comic store.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm recommending this. I'm just intrigued, and I think you might be intrigued too.
Yes.
But I had to buy it. I just happened to be at the local comic store, and I saw on the shelf Cobra Commander 1.
We were just talking. You summoned it.
And I was like, Cobra Commander 1?
Yeah.
Okay. So I bought it because I am not one of those people who will read it in the store. That's stealing.
You can only do that if you're there to pick up your pulls, like we were talking about earlier. You already, you know, you spent your comic book budget. And now you're, you know, checking out the periphery. I get that.
I mean, I'll leaf through it to look at the art and stuff, but I'm not going to read it because to me that's stealing.
This isn't a library.
It's not.
So library has graphic novels, by the way. Go check it out.
Yeah, it's true. So I bought the cheaper one. They had the alternate cover one that was backed and boarded that cost like $10. Or I can just buy the regular one. I was like, I'll just buy the regular one. So I went and bought the regular one, took it home, dug into it. And I don't know what's happening right now. They're doing a thing right now where they're mixing G.I. Joe and Transformers together. Did you know this?
No.
So this is like...
You're getting your chocolate into my peanut butter.
Right. It has Cobra Commander, like, he basically brutally steals some guy's vehicle, but it has a backdrop of kind of his origin story.
Of Cobra's origin story.
Cobra Commander's origin story.
Okay.
He comes from some place called Cobra Law.
Is it related? Is it next door to Shangri-La?
I know. It was kind of goofy.
I love it. No, it's comic book.
And... anyway, I think it's underwater. I couldn't really tell. I couldn't tell if it was underwater or they were like flying mantis looking things. Either way, there's craziness that goes on and he gets all messed up and then rebirthed with the power of snakes, and it's so bizarre. But the craziest thing is that he has Megatron, the leader of the Decepticons.
Yeah.
He has Megatron like chained up and attached to like all these computers.
I love it.
And he's like studying him and trying to figure out the source of his powers.
It's the spark. Come on now.
Yeah. And that's kind of where it leaves it off.
That's fun though.
So I'm sitting there going like, what's happening right now? I loved both those shows when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But it's like Cobra Commander has Megatron all chained up and he's trying to figure out how he ticks?
Yeah. See, that makes me super excited for so many reasons, because one, like we talked, this is what we love. It's people playing with the toys that you had.
Yeah,
like you had G.I. Joes and Transformers.
Yeah.
You're going to play with them together.
Yeah.
You know, and what used to be like in the early 2000s, they would have done this, like, we're doing a crossover comic. We got to get some readers. We got to get people into the shop.
Yeah.
You know, let's throw these properties together, do a six run, a six issue run and make some money. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, you know, they're actually setting up to play with these toys in a fun way, but also tell an actual engaging story. That's amazing.
No, there's a whole back page where the writer is talking about what they're doing. They're just making this whole new world of G.I. Joe and Transformers.
But that's it. That sounds like the nerd taking the toys that they grew up with and love and saying, no, this is how their story truly goes.
Yeah.
Megatron's been tied up in the cave this whole time.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued.
I love it.
I mean, Cobra Law was kind of goofy, but at the same time, I'm looking through the thing and I'm like, Cobra Law, this is goofy. And then I'm like, is that Megatron? He's got. I'm like, oh, I think I'm on board now.
That's hilarious.
Because if Megatron's in this world, then it means, you know, Optimus Prime's in this world.
One would assume.
Yeah.
And the Transformers has done multiverse stuff and time travel. Yeah. So
I think I saw in the back of this, and because I'm talking out, there might be comic book fans who are yelling at me right now. But I think I saw in the back of this that there is, it might be in its third book now, there is also, and I think it's supposed to be in this world, a Duke series of books.
Okay.
From G.I. Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think what they're doing is they're probably going to, well, Duke and Cobra Commander do eventually meet up.
That's it.
And he kills them.
that's not happened. In the true story.
Yeah, well, that happened in the animated. But I'm intrigued.
But yeah.
I don't think I'm ready to go out and buy Duke 2 as well, but who knows, maybe. I might have to start pulls again because it's early enough in the... Because that's what I do. I don't know if you do that. When I'm at a comic book store, if I'm going through and it's like on 39 or 20, I'm like... Yeah, but if it's on like one or two,
you're right there on the cusp.
Yeah, I might start grabbing it.
Yeah, it's like finding new treasure. It's like, ooh, this is a fresh new thing.
Yeah,
that's cool. But yeah, you got to get the whole world. You don't know what's happening over in Duke's timeline.
Yeah,
could be important Easter eggs.
Yeah, he might be hanging out with Optimus Prime. For all I know,
if they're doing their merchandising right, they got to make them crossover.
But how much better is it? I want to see those as movies now. Because how much better? Because they always do the same thing in those Transformers movies. It's always like. Some street kid comes across the car he needs to fix up and
Bumblebee.
It ends up being a Transformer. Yeah. But how much cooler is it to like the Transformers team up with like the world's greatest heroes?
Yeah, absolutely. That has nightmare scenario written all over it just because that is the perfect movie for our favorite cigar chomping suits to be like, let's just put them together. We don't need a story. Just put them on screen.
Yeah.
You know?
But I might like...
No, and that would absolutely... I mean, my argument is that's the current Transformers movies. They're a blast, but it's really just, look at the big robots.
Yeah.
Look at the kid found a car and it's Bumblebee.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're describing. It's perfect. But if you did like an Edge of Tomorrow style... You remember that Tom Cruise movie where he keeps dying, but there's robots in the sci-fi? Yeah. If you did that level of sci-fi movie, but the characters happen to be Transformers and G.I. Joe, you'd make a killing. You could make eight of them.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
No, but that's fascinating. G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Yeah.
Too much chocolate in my peanut butter, though.
Yeah.
Who would you hope win out of Transformers versus G.I. Joe? Who do you put your money on?
Well, I mean, they're going to team up. It's going to be Cobra and the Decepticons.
Oh, that's true.
But maybe not, though, because if Cobra Commander is sitting there basically torturing Megatron...
Yeah, yeah.
Then it doesn't seem... I don't know. It's going to be... See, I'm intrigued by this goofball comic.
It could be like Iron Man and Captain America fighting. It's like, you're both good guys. Why are you fighting?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That makes me excited. Yeah, get those pulls. I'll end us out with some two weirdo comic recommendations, but there's a purpose to both of these. One is just to get you intrigued and do what Kevin did and get you out. Go to your local comic store and just pick up an issue of a comic called Something is Killing the Children.
Oh.
There's the title for you. Pretty intriguing. Yeah, sounds like an old emo band from the early aughts when it was a sentence for a band name. I'm glad that trend died. But this is called Something is Killing the Children, and I really just name check it and move on to my next one because... The less you know about it, the better better time you're going to have.
Okay.
There's Stephen King vibes in here.
Ah.
There's a little bit of Sweet Tooth in here. Oh. You know, not necessarily post-apocalyptic, but something weird in the woods. And then you have almost anime protagonist teen power girl that shows up to help save the day, but in a Stephen King-y way. In more of that tone. So, yes. There's seven.
Who makes it?
It's two guys. The writer is James Tynion IV, and the artist is Werther Delladera. So they're big names now because this is actually winning awards.
Who's the publisher?
The publisher is Boom Comics.
Oh, Boom. I've heard of them. Yeah.
More of the popular now, but the indie side. It's not Marvel or DC's.
Yeah. The G.I. Joe one, the Cobra Commander is an Image comic.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Boom, Dynamite, Image.
Image is, it's kind of funny because Dark Horse and Image, when we were younger, were the indie ones.
Yep, Vertigo.
But I'd argue now that they're part of the pantheon.
Yeah.
They're like Fox and, you know, remember Fox was the weird television channel? And it's just one of them?
It's one of them.
WB was the weird television channel, and now it's just one of them?
The CW? Now it's a household name.
Yeah. So that's kind of what Image and Dark Horse were.
I believe it, yeah.
At the time. But Boom is definitely a legit indie right now.
For sure. James Tynion IV and Werther Delladera. It's won a bunch of Eisners already. There is 35 issues out.
Oh.
But it is ongoing. It's not. Mm-hmm. They do have an end game in sight, but it is currently running. So
do you have all 35?
I have the first couple trade paperbacks, and then I'm picking up the ongoings. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have the first four on trade paperback.
Okay.
And then the rest in issues. But for comics, for something I'm reading, this is something I've gotten back into, so I just got to share the wealth. One of the nerdy things that I realized I've done most of my life is read webcomics. Do you read webcomics at all? Or do you just sort of get them as they come across your screen?
I'll have to admit that I'm out of the webcomics game, but there was a time and a place in the early 2000s when I was into them quite a bit.
That's it?
Yeah.
And I say it the same way. I did fall out of favor with them and just sort of stopped keeping up with them because there were some. Webcomics is essentially just self-published comic strips.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some are graphic novel level, some are Sunday strip level, but some of them come and go. Some of them have ongoing stories and some of them are short-lived, but they're still going. I've recently come across awesome ones, and so it's not that webcomics went away and now they're coming back. It's just I've tapped back into it again, and there's just many awesome ones currently going as the old ones I used to read, like your Penny Arcades and your PVPs and all those.
I used to read Get Fuzzy before it was ever in the newspaper.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You could follow that artist. I don't know if it was a live journal or what, but yeah, you used to post them.
Yeah.
So the one I will mention is called Kill 6 Billion Demons.
Mm.
Yep. Another intriguing title. So epic and ominous. Kill 6 Billion Demons. And this is a webcomic about
someone who kills 6 billion demons.
Someone who's attempting to kill 6 billion demons. Would you say that's an easy task or a difficult task?
I don't know. Depends on the powers that you wield.
Here's the elevator pitch, though. Far beyond Earth, the multiverse is in chaos as criminals rule and callous kings maintain a fragile peace.
Mm.
One day, a mysterious and bloody figure appears to a woman named Allison and bestows her with a legendary artifact known as the Key of Kings.
Oh.
That's a simple description. What's cool in the comic is actually that being puts it into her forehead.
Oh.
Like mystical power style. So she has the Key of Kings in her brain. By doing so, he transports Allison into Throne, a land of mysterious as it is bizarre. But when rumors about the key begin to spread, Allison must not only learn to face herself, but ensure the security of the world at large. Ooh. So Throne is the main crux of this whole webcomic and what makes it awesome. It is this fantastical world, but it's almost like somebody's new, bizarrely created up Mount Olympus.
Wow.
Abaddon is the avatar name of the creator. It's a guy named Tom Bloom in real life, but he goes by the username Abaddon. Has created a mythology. He has created, I'm pretty sure he has the red string map laid out sheet of all 6 billion demons.
Oh.
But he puts a lot of religious and mythological themes in the way he presents this project.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cast of characters that are gods, and they're old, also old Indian gods, gods with six hands and three heads, you know?
Yeah,
so it's weird-looking, just mythological beings. And every issue, not only is the artwork great, but every issue is almost like a Where's Waldo page because of all the details and this world that he's building. Because he'll put these gods in the background, and you think he's just drawing like little figures, but then a couple chapters later, that figure is important. And then you can go back and be like, oh, he was there the whole time, which you thought was just a weird looking little like deity doodle is actually important.
Mm.
And he's planning it out. Like that, the thing we talk about with Michael Watson, mm-hmm. you know, where you could, the creator has that story in their brain.
Yeah.
And this one drops you right in the middle of it. Allison gets a key put into her brain and says, hey, go fix this world of gods and kings. And gets transported there and basically is given a sword and is like, what? I was supposed to go to class this morning. It's like, no, you have to save the fate of the world and kill 6 billion demons.
Okay.
But it's a creator that's putting in these little Easter eggs and has built this whole world and is only giving the audience little teases of it and in the best way possible.
Oh, wow.
And it's ongoing and it's online and you can read it at work. You can read it in the bathroom. You can read it on any screen.
That's cool.
And it's pages long now, but don't even worry about, just hit page one and see how far you get just because it's so engaging.
That sounds awesome.
Kill 6 billion demons. I don't know if she does, but it seems like she's making good headway. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Well, Mikey, there's a pizza here.
Ding dong.
The pizza being here means it's the end of our show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're going to eat pizza. We hope you guys like the arbitrary assumptions because we're going to do it again because it's fun for us. Hopefully it's fun for you. But we want to know your arbitrary assumptions.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us know what's hot in your world, what you're digging on, what games you want us to try, what things you want us to read, what things you want us to watch.
Yeah.
We love recommendations and we will take them gladly.
Yeah, yeah.
So let us know. Hit us up on the social medias. At Assuming Pod, just go to any of them and try At Assuming Pod.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're there, we're there. And if we're not, we're not.
Yet.
And if we're not there, then you need to tell us that we need to be there by Gmailing us, assumingpositions@gmail.com.
.com. Why aren't you guys on Spongle?
Spongle. Yeah. Is that a thing?
For I think it's an old band name.
Oh, okay.
But I was using it as a stand-in for a made-up social media. Sounds like one, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
Dude, I totally hit you guys up on Spongle.
Every week I ask Mikey, how do you want them to format the Gmail?
Be the comic book guy. Either if you know about the recommendations we talked about today, be like, actually, you were wrong and this is better. But yeah, comic book guy. This is the best game ever.
I gotta get back to work. My manager's gonna be mad if I keep talking to you all the time.
Shadowrun is the worst use of shadow in a game title. Yeah. Something like that.
We want to thank you, Positrons, for listening. We love you guys so much. If you'd like to support what we do here, podcasting is not free, but you can help us out. Go to buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod
and
throw some tips in the tip jar. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. We love our Positrons. That's your name if you're our fan. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, not Scott Productions for our equipment, and Jazzar for our music. We hope you guys have a great rest of the week. Hey, what's in the polls over there, Mikey? What do you got there?
Something is killing the children.
What? Wait, what's going on? Are you okay?
Our pizza is alive.